This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Anthony Brooks is out today. And yes, it has been a hot, humid summer so far. Time was when you'd run to the movie theater to escape the heat. But now, with air conditioners propped on windowsills and Netflix streaming to those big screen TVs, maybe you don't take refuge in movie theaters the way you once did. But still, there is a magic and allure to a great summertime flick, whether it be a multi-million dollar global blockbuster or that unexpected indie film that quietly seduces moviegoers. This is the season where movies come into their own as a form of entertainment, escape, and enchantment. So we thought we'd spend some time today with someone who knows a lot about summer films. He's Wesley Morris, Pulitzer Prize-winning film critic for the Boston Globe, and he joins us today from the studios of KQED in San Francisco. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Wesley.
Hi, Meghna. How are you?
Doing great. Great to have you again. And listeners, we're going to be hearing Wesley Morris's picks for this summer, and we want to hear yours, too. What are the great summer movies you've seen so far? What's going to draw you back to the cinema again and again? And if you were on a desert island, what films would you take with you? Ones you just can't live without. Are they contemporary? Are they classic? Are they local? Are they documentaries? What can't you wait to get to in that Netflix queue of yours? So give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. So, Wesley, I've got your list here in front of me. It's pretty exciting. What do you want to start with? I mean, it's actually, I'm going to give a little tease to people. It is unexpected. But what's the first flick you want to start with that you think people should go see this summer?
Well, wait, we should be clear, though. Is it the list? And we're talking about things that are in theaters or things that you stay home and watch?
Good point. Yeah, because there's the stay home, there's the desert island stuff. Let's start with stuff that right now is still in theaters.
Okay, well, the thing that probably would most benefit from people knowing it was out there is a movie called Beasts of the Southern Wild, which is about... this movie isn't really an about movie. It's just you have to go and let it happen to you, because me giving you a synopsis of the plot, in as much as there is no real plot, doesn't really help. It's just it's a director and his cast and his crew basically giving you this sort of sideways apocalyptic vision of the future, the present, the past. It's set in the Mississippi Delta, like southern Louisiana, on a little island that is virtually underwater. Basically, a junk heap inhabited by a handful of people who seem happy to live there.
And global warming comes into the mix.
But once you start layering these once you begin to put it into a context, unless we're talking about this movie for the next 40 minutes, it just makes it sound like something it isn't. It sounds almost sort of ethnographically non-fictional. It seems sort of magic realist, which it is in a lot of ways.
Prehistoric animals come back to life, the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, and it touches, I mean, it, visually, it's sort of... It touches on a lot of things. I mean, everything from Little Black Sambo to, Maury Sendak to The Wizard of Oz. I mean, there's a lot of stuff happening in this movie that, without really taking the time to unpack what's going on, just makes it sound like something you might not want to experience. But the two times that I've experienced this movie, you can feel people sort of trying to figure out what's going on in it. And by the time it's over, I think, everybody is sort of either wet-eyed, not so much because it's moving in a conventionally emotional way, but because you feel like a director has given you something that you've never seen before.
Well, I still want to give
And it works.
I want to give listeners a little taste of the film, because you're right. It's a little difficult to describe because it covers a lot of ground. But we've got a little behind-the-scenes featurette, a scene from that. And in it, you're going to hear first-time director Bane Zeitlin and stars Dwight Henry and the young Kevin-Jeanne Wallace. This is, again, from Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Dwink is the leader of the town. When something happens in the town, everybody looking to Wink to save the day.
And if the water gets real high, we're going to float to this roof, we're going to bust through the ceiling, and we're going to ride away, okay? I'm your daddy. This is my job to keep you from dying.
It is this question of, should these people leave this place?
The water ain't going down, man.
That's my beautiful place under that wall.
The reason they should stay is so much simpler than that, actually. You know, and you would say, like, oh, a six-year-old would understand it. So I thought, like, well, if we take this through her eyes and let her explain this, and you understand that the reason to stay is so emotional and it's such a feeling that you can't give up.
In a million years, when kids go to school, they're gonna know once there was a hush puppy and she lived with her daddy in the bathtub.
So that's a little mix from Beasts of the Southern Wild. Wesley, you've called this a close to great movie, and it's a first-time directorial debut from director Bain Zeitlin. I mean, did you expect that?
No. No, I mean, this is a movie that these things, you know, it's also interesting to me. I mean, just to answer, this is sort of a longer way to answer your question. There are a lot of movies, if anybody familiar with the online video site Vimeo is aware, you know, you see, if you spend a little time there, you see a lot of things that are almost good, or, you know, you see a lot of people post things that have a lot of technical merit but not a lot of vision. There's no script. They just have a really cool camera and that's almost enough for them. This is a movie that you go into. I mean, I didn't see it on Vimeo, but I mean, it is very much of a piece with that, where, like, you know, somebody had access to special effects. And mm-hmm. So they use the special effects, and the special effects are sort of the dominant thing in the film. This movie uses special effects, and you don't really know where they begin and where they end. And it's such a seamlessly rendered vision that is both organic and sort of digitized in a lot of ways. And just the teamwork, I feel, I mean, you know, it's Bain Zeitlin's movie, but I really, what moves me about it is that you really feel like it was a group of people coming together to realize his vision, which is true of every movie. But this felt much more, and part of it is the context. This felt much more like a community effort to me, in a sort of grand way. So, well, no, I was not expecting the movie I got, but I was so happy that I got the movie I did.
So that's Beast of the Southern Wild, and that's one.
You should see it, you guys. It
sounds amazing.
Hard.
Yeah,
it's not hard. It's beautiful. It's moving.
I wanted to swing the pendulum to the other end of the summertime movie experience. Here's
sure.
a little taste of that.
Did they kill him?
I'm not sure.
Huh. Why didn't you just kill me?
Your punishment must be more severe.
Do you think he's coming back?
I don't know.
Why would you run, Bane?
You should be as afraid of him as I am.
I won't bury you. I've buried enough members of the Wayne family.
So that is the blockbuster of the summer, of course, The Dark Knight Rises. Wesley, did you like it?
I did. And, you know, positioning this as being as far away from Beasts of the Southern Wild as you could possibly get is not, the thing that I like about both these movies is that they both are representations of a director's vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in they're both referential in their own ways. And I think that the thing about Dark Knight Rises and this trilogy of movies that Christopher Nolan has given us is that he is a very clear, or I should say in at least one of the movies, very clear. In this case, not as clear as the second film, The Dark Knight. But he has a vision for this dystopian future in which, you know, all bets are off. There's nothing but nihilism and people hell-bent on destroying humanity as we know it. This movie does work. I mean, it's unfortunate that we now have to think about it in the frame of events from last weekend.
Right.
But, you know, even before that, you really, it's funny because when I was listening to that clip you just played, hearing Bane's voice in my headphones without being able to see him, I got a little bit of a chill. So, he's not the greatest villain in the world. I think that voice is a wonderful conceit. I mean, the Joker in the second film, The Dark Knight, is a much more compelling vision of evil.
Right, and I mean, Heath Ledger really knocked that one out of the park.
Yes. Right. I think this, and Bane is sort of, it's complicated too because there's a plot twist in this movie that kind of changes the focus of the evil. It's a ridiculous plot twist, and you know, the really crazy thing about it is you can't discuss it because it is a plot twist, but it's also kind of strangely offensive at the same time. It does answer a question I had while I was watching about why this particular potential plot twist was operating the way it was, until of course it was revealed that was what was going on. But it does work, and you know, I mean, it's unstoppable at this point.
Unstoppable as a global blockbuster.
As a blockbuster, yeah. Yes. Okay. I mean, I think that, you know, it's a movie that people feel like they have to see because Warner Brothers has told them they have to, and because this series, in a understandable and surprising way, means a lot to a lot of young people.
Well, there is another film that I want to talk about that's on your list that I really think is one that is both, it's got some twists in it in terms of the storyline and who's in it, and that is Magic Mike. Story about,
it's got some twists on the stage too,
yeah,
right?
It's a story about kind of an older owner of a strip club, a male strip club, who takes a young stripper under his wing, and Matthew McConaughey plays Dallas, the strip club owner, and he apparently just walks away with the film. Before I let you talk about it, I want to play a little clip, and here is Matthew McConaughey as Dallas again, the strip club owner in the movie Magic Mike, I should say, training a young stripper in the gym.
That's a very different.
You're not just stripping. Are you all fulfilling every woman's wildest fantasies? You are the husband that they never had. You are that dreamboat guy that never came along. You are the one night stand, that free fling of a that they get to have tonight with you on stage and still go home to their hubby and not get in trouble because you, baby, you made it legal. You are the liberation.
So that's Matthew McConaughey as Dallas in Magic Mike. Wesley, you said that this movie should not have been, given the subject matter, as good as it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is, I mean, I hate to keep coming back to this idea of vision and craftsmanship, but I mean, you know, as much as we go to the movies to be entertained, we also, part of the ability to be entertained at all is to know that the people giving you these movies know what they're doing. So it doesn't matter what Steven Soderbergh has been given to direct in a lot of ways. If he's taken on a subject or if he's taken on a script, he's figured out a way. You assume he's figured out a way to sort of make it work. And in this case, he has. I mean, it's a pretty elementary script. I mean, the stripper, you know, there's a stripper who wants to get out of the business, played by Channing Tatum, who finds this young kid and brings him to the club, and the kid winds up part of the act. And the twist here is that you normally think in these movies that it's a cautionary tale in which the kid will be exposed to these, you know, this dirty lifestyle and the drugs and the sex and the stripping and the adulation from these women in the audience, and he'll be disgusted and want to, you know, be a lawyer or go to law school or something like that. But no, I mean, this kid gets turned on by it. He's played by Alex Pettifer. He's a British actor. He's really good in this movie. I mean, he's not as flashy as Matthew McConaughey is in Channing Tatum in a slightly less flashy way. But I mean, I think that the thing that he brings to this role is a very kind of serious observational quality that then turns into this slightly seedier character. But I mean,
well, Wesley, hang on
movie
there for just a second, because you mentioned Alex Pettifer, who plays Adam, and we've got a clip of the movie, which I just thought was hilarious. And again,
it's funny too. It's very funny.
It's a very telling scene. So this is Adam again, played by Alex Pettifer. He's in the bathroom shaving his legs for his job, and his sister Joanna, played by Olivia Munn, doesn't know he's a stripper. So she confronts her brother about something she's found in his room.
Adam, I need to talk to you.
What about?
I need to talk to you about this box of boots and thongs and sailor hats and tube socks. And I don't even know.
It's for work?
It's for work?
Yeah,
Adam, don't be lying to me, man. Come on, I'm your sister. I love you. I don't judge you. You're my brother. Just please come out here so I can talk to you. You know what? I don't care what your preferences are, man.
Preferences?
I want to talk to you about...
Hey! It is not what it looks like.
Is that my razor?
That's a scene there from Magic Mike, one of Pulitzer Prize-winning film critics Wesley Morris's picks for great films to see this summer. Wesley, we just got about 2 minutes left, and I do want to give you a chance to tell us what your sort of desert island picks would be if you had to be locked away someplace and you couldn't go to a modern-day film. You know, one or two things I think that you'd take with you.
Sure. I should also say that Olivia Munn, that was Cody Horn, who plays a sister in Magic Mike.
Oh, my mistake. I'm terribly sorry about that. My mistake.
No, that's fine. I mean, I they're very different, and I'd much rather watch Cody Horn than Olivia Munn. No offense, Olivia Munn. Desert Island movies that I'd like to spend some time with in the summer. Do the Right Thing, I think, is just a perfect movie. Have you seen it?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's a movie. It's weird because I might watch it once every couple of years. And it's a Spike Lee movie from 1989. It's about this one day in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, in which, you know, the whole neighborhood kind of goes up in racial conflagration. It's strangely, depressingly timeless. I mean, it's just as true now as it was, you know, in 1989. And the thing that I get from watching it every time I see it is it's visual. It's extremely visual. It's extremely cinematic. But it also is the best thing he has ever written. And he's written a lot of screenplays, and a lot of them have been, you know, real head scratchers. This structurally is beautiful. I think a lot of the things that the characters say, a lot of that stuff is really true. I could watch it every day for the rest of my life. I know that sort of makes me kind of exceptional.
It's a great film, and as you said, a timeless one, and a perfect summer film as well, given when it's
set. It's set on the hottest day in Brooklyn.
Well, we've got a lot more on Wesley Morris's list of great summer films to see, and you could check them all out at our website, radioboston.org. Wesley, always great to talk to you. Thank you for spending your time with us today.
It's great to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
You too. Wesley Morris is the Pulitzer Prize-winning film critic for the Boston Globe. We're going to go out with a little bit of music from Beasts of the Southern Wild, that movie that Wesley Morris is indeed wild about. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody, and join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.